Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is this thing on?
They can hear you.
It's quiet. My name is Morgan, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Morgan.
Hello, everybody. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They're right out there across the main foyer and up the small flight of stairs to your left. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing Step 8 and 9, Part 1. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Grace and Casey. So for those of you that are following along, the first reading is going to be on page 76, and then the panel will each share for a little bit on each of the readings. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. I forgot to figure out which one of y'all wanted to go first.
Grace said she did. I've been voluntold. All right. I'm Grace. I'm an alcoholic. So I'm going to qualify real quick because this talks about me running my life on self-will and the damage I caused doing that, which... was my self-will is what got me in trouble, but I didn't know that. I thought it was booze, and I drank it, and I drank it, and I drank it, and I kept winding up with the same results. We weren't good. So by the time I got in here, I was really looking for a way to live so that I never had to drink again. That's just a short synopsis. I was ready. It talks about the list that we got from the fourth step, and I'm going to tell you, if it can be done wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've done it wrong. And somehow I've managed to stay sober a few 24s. When I did my first four step, I didn't think I even had any resentments. So and the only character defect I had was I was sloth. I thought that was it. That was all I could come up with that first time around. And my first sponsor, she let me go, and I moved right on. And I did manage to come up with a list. She kept saying, "It's just a list. Just write the list. Who have you wronged? Who have you wronged? Who have you wronged? Don't overthink it." I was afraid. I don't want to get too far ahead because we still have so many other things to read. But the willingness is what was key to me in that eighth step. It was just a list, and it was two parts. It was write the damn list, you know. And I had harmed, for me in the beginning, it was like a big bill. We're going to talk about that. It says we alcoholics owed a lot of money, you know. That's what had me wrapped around the axle. I still, when I first did this, I got to tell you, I was still very selfish and self-centered, and I was really worried about how y'all were going to affect me, that it wasn't going to work out. But I wrote the list. I wrote the list. And I am going to preface this. We're told when we get here to get a sponsor, and the steps are in order for a reason. And again, if it can be done wrong, I did it. When I first got sober, I had lost everything. I was homeless. I had did that midnight dash from a house I'd been renting. I owed rent. I owed all this stuff. And so when I came out of the rehab, now I'm like 30 days sober. I wanted to start righting those wrongs. Big mistake. I was ready to call people and lead with, "No, I'm an alcoholic. I'm in recovery. There it is. You should feel sorry for me." I hadn't done any of the other steps. The poor man, he's like, "Oh, dear God, you know, are you going to be all right?" God always does for me what I can't do for myself. Thank God I don't have to do everything immediately. I'm learning that the longer I'm here. When it's time, it shows up. It shows up. The willingness to do it, that's the key here for me. That's always been the key. I'm grateful that every sponsor I've had, and I've only had two, has never forced me out into the world to go make amends. I get to do that not just in my time, but in God's time. It seems to present itself. I'm going to make note here because I marked it. The last thing that Morgan read, remember it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And I did make that agreement. I absolutely was done. And by the time I rolled up to this step, 8 and 9, which to me roll into one, because once I'm willing, you can't hold me back. You can't stop me from writing it. It's the willingness. Anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks. My name's Casey. I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hi, Casey.
And I have a sponsor who knows that she sponsors me, and I have a home group. We meet on Tuesdays, Big Book in Ghent at 5:30, and I have a sobriety date, which I cherish. So I'm super thankful to be here tonight. I just, there have been so many factors in my life just in the last month that just have me at such amazement that I was able to make it out, and I'm super thankful. I had a really strong desire to feel better, so I was really looking forward to the amends process because I wanted to say how I felt. It comes as a huge surprise that nobody cared how I felt and that I had been saying that for a really long time at their expense. So I remember one of the first amends that I didn't have a hard time with willingness, but I did have a hard time lining myself up with the purpose of amends. And it was actually Jill. I don't know if you guys know her. I called her and I was on my way to make an amends to my dad, and I was pretty excited about doing it because I love my dad And I had talked to my sponsor about it, and I had done all of the right steps to prepare myself for it. And right before I got to his house, I just turned into like a blob of tears. I couldn't even speak. And so I called Jill and, you know, told her, you know, all of this guilt that was coming over me that I was feeling walking into the store. And she says, oh, well, it sounds like to me that you're going to say you're sorry, which is completely different than going and making amends for your wrongs. And it was profound to me. And I can, and going to make an amends for genuinely thinking about how I may have made him feel and the things that I remember, you know, just the ones I remember, because, you know, we are talking about my dad, so he was there from beginning all the way to the end. He probably remembers a lot more than I do. It made the amends process and the things that I said become completely about my dad and no longer about what I wanted to say. And I'm super thankful that, one, Jill always answered my phone call, and two, understood me when I was crying, because I called her a lot in that condition. So I love where it says here that now we need more action, you know, because I will tell you, after doing steps, you know, 1 through 5, you know, 6 and 7, I, you know, everybody's ready for a break, right? And at least I know why I was. My 4-step was, all of my 4 steps have been like running a marathon. They're exhausting. And so I needed to be told that faith without work is dead, you know, and that there isn't a break. It's daily, right? They tell us this in a bunch of subliminal ways all throughout the book, but they just remind us here that time for more action. Thank you for letting me be here.
Thanks, Casey.
All right. Okay, somebody did turn those up. The next reading is also on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we've heard, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries.
All right. Still Grace, still an alcoholic. I looked this up one time, diffident, and because I was told I didn't know everything, and I didn't know I should look it up and not wing it. as I said when I came in here, I'm going to wing it. It means modest or shy because of lack of self-confidence. And I got to tell you, when I came in here, I am the egomaniac with an inferiority complex. So going out. And again, when I first was doing this, and I did the first, I went through the first 12 steps in my first year. So, and thank you, Casey, for reminding me. I too have a sponsor who knows she sponsors me, and I have a home group, which is awesome, and we meet at 5:30 on Sundays in Bainbridge. It's the Chesapeake Big Book Study. Please come and join us. But so this lack of confidence, and again, that ego, that big ego of mine, I'm glad I had a sponsor who did keep me grounded and staying in doing the next right thing and not jumping out with this massive undertaking. There were not a lot of direct amends to be made for me to people in general. Initially, my behavior, my to stop being that that tornado, that constant turmoil in their lives, was the greatest gift I could give anybody. Most of my family did not want to ever hear me say I'm sorry again, or even talk about the crap I had done. They didn't even want to hear it. It's real important for me to remember that, you know, that part in the ninth step that says, unless to do so would injure others. Because I want relief. I want relief. And so my self-centeredness always led me out, you know, the ends justified the means. And so if it was going to make me feel better, I didn't give you a lot of thought. I just didn't. So to sometimes practicing restraint and waiting and just acting as if I'm no longer taking and abusing you was the best way I could approach it. It, in my experience, and there's been family members that I've had to verbally make amends to more than once. Now I've got some practice and I do get relief from it. But the fact, the truth be told, for me, I may never repair is maybe not the right word, those relationships. Like I said, some of them were so damaged and so toxic to begin with that the best I can do is not cause them any more trouble. You know, to leave people alone is hard for me when it's not going my way. The business end of this deal, yeah, we're going to talk about that. That was, there was a big bill coming due, and I have miracles to talk about over that. But it was a slow process. My amends, steps 8 and 9 have not been quick or easy. It's not been my experience. It's been about getting willing, and I have to remember what came before this, and that was the seventh step. All of that prepared me to be able to do this. And building this relationship with my Creator that has taken time. There are a lot of things that I couldn't have done in the first, second, or third year and been able to see the benefits and the rewards from it, from the amends process. Not just for me, for them. And for others around me, I love it that I get to share my experience with other people, but I can't share what I don't have yet. And if I go out rushing into everything, I got nothing. I have found that the longer I wait for the magic, for God's time, the better the surprise at the end. It's been really cool. Anyway, that's it.
Casey, alcoholic addict. So, I was pretty ecstatic that I didn't have to go tell anybody about the God thing myself. So I grew up in a religious family, and I smarted from the whole God thing a long time. So I was not in some huge hurry to go tell people I found Christ. I also grew up in Ocean View, and everybody always goes to jail and finds God. So it wasn't, like, really cool. You know, like, it wasn't cool. So So what I like most about this is our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And I had absolutely no idea how to do that, and I'm still learning. That was a small prayer that I could hold on to because I had so much damage from my drinking and my using. I didn't know where to begin. I didn't know where the line was, where when to damage when I would cause damage by speaking or cause damage by not speaking. And I really had to become open to talking about my fears and getting real honest with God and women that had been in similar situations as me, as well as my sponsor. And that's a really uncomfortable thing to do. And I have amends now, and I'll speak candidly, for example, my daughter, who is 23 years old, that we have not spoke about the things that have happened in the past. She doesn't want to, quote unquote, hear that shit, Mom. So, however, that is not to say that I am free of making amends to my daughter. So the amends that I get to make to her today, because I taught her some really healthy emotional coping strategies, as I get to show her the new ones that I'm learning from the strong, healthy women in my life today. So, you know, I get to call her when she's mad at me and when I'm mad at her. I get to be loving when she behaves the exact way that I taught her how to behave. You know, and I've said this before, that I have absolutely no idea how to parent a child that was raised by an addict or an alcoholic. It is one of the most challenging things that I've ever done, and it's heartbreaking. And it's really easy to fall back into remorse and regret, and to forget that little line where I'm supposed to be of maximum service, right? And my daughter's mean. Like, it would be really nice sometimes just to throw her the finger and walk out, and then there's my sponsors like, you have the opportunity to show up for your child in a safe and effective way. And I'm just like, oh my God, is this an opportunity? It is very much an opportunity, you know, because my sponsor pointed out to me one time, for a long time I wasn't a safe place to be mad, you know? The roles were reversed, where she was my caretaker for some time in our lives, and now she gets to be the child that she's supposed to be, and I get to be the mother that I'm supposed to be, hopefully. I love doing inventory, and I swear it feels like it's always time to do another four step before I've finished one ninth step. And so the more that I learn about my disease of alcoholism, when I first started doing inventories, it was very I'm sorry I stole your purse, and I'm sorry I didn't show up for Thanksgiving, they have turned into more things like, I'm sorry that I wasn't considerate of how you were feeling, and so I get to see the way alcoholism works, I'm sorry, I'm nervous and I totally just lost my train of thought. So my point basically is just that my amends list it just keeps evolving. And the more that I learn about myself, and the more that I'm able to be honest with myself and hear the directions that's being given to me from other people, the more ways I see in which I could show up or did not show up for someone else. And I'm actually thankful for that opportunity. For a long time, the ninth step was like this beating thing about, you big piece of beep, like, look what you did, you're such a fling, I don't think that's what the ninth step is supposed to be about, somebody just said take the trash out so you can get some new stuff, I was very excited to get rid of my trash. Like I said before, I had some ulterior motives about doing my nice stuff. I really wanted to get rid of all of this gunk on the inside of me, but not everybody else is always willing to get rid of it, and then again, what Jill taught me, it's not about me. My amends are not about me. I have amends that I've wanted to make for a really long time that I can't, and I want to make them because, like, for example, with my daughter, I just want it to be over, It's not, I don't get to pick that, so... Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Kate.
All right. Next reading is on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done more harm to us than we have done to him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
So, what a strange concept, this taking my own inventory. It was, whenever I'm disturbed, I don't mean to jump ahead, but whenever I'm disturbed, the problem's me. So, forgiveness. Even when I'm wronged, as a solution, was a strange idea. It was like, excuse me? My disease likes to manifest itself in three ways. It rationalizes, justifies, and lies. And yes, I stole that, but I love it. Because it's just how I roll. It's how I think. I can justify anything. And sometimes there was a lot of things in my world that were done wrong, that I was hurt. But I held on to them, and those were the resentments. Those were the things that were blocking me and clogging me up and dragging me down and not allowing me to be effective and be of service to God, which was what was talked about. And that's the purpose here for this, you know, so I never have to drink again. Remember that part they said? I was willing to go to any lengths. And so to figure out my part in stuff that was clearly I was wronged, and then to have someone suggest that I might need to pray for them or forgive them was like, you're effing kidding me, you know? But if I want relief, my sponsor today, when she's listened to me want about enough, you know, she's had about enough about justifiable anger or whatever it is, she'll say, you know, she'll give me a suggestion about doing an inventory and moving through the steps, because a big part of the amends was letting people off the hook. The first time I heard that was from her. Why don't you let them off the hook? You might get some relief. Sometimes I want to hold on to that, but the only one being hurt is me, and it's self-inflicted. It's all self-inflicted. The forgiving spirit that they talk about here, that I underlined it because the forgiveness is so, you know, this turning into a spiritual being and practicing spiritual principles was like learning Chinese. It was hard. It wasn't natural, and it has taken a relationship with my Creator to be able to do that, to even be willing, there's that word for me again, to comprehend the concept that it might be possible. You know, how far down the road I have to take it to get some relief. It's amazing. I mean, these steps have, and I'm so glad they're in order for a reason. Because I again, will never have to drink again. There's no reason as long as I practice this stuff. Anyway, that's all I got on that. Thanks.
Oh, so, you know, I didn't really have a whole lot of per se enemies, but I did, you know, it's family, you know. Family's so hard. Like, you love them, but they're wrong in a lot of ways, you know. So it took me a lot of work to be able to just talk about my side without their side completely taking over where I was at. And you know, like, I felt like because, like, some of my amends didn't get made, you know, and two and three, four steps later, I still haven't made these particular amends. And then randomly one day they happen. You know, and there's that old saying that says when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. You know, and thank God that I was able to have enough clarity about myself for once, just to keep my mouth shut. You know, for a really long time, because I knew that there was still a lot of unsettled feelings inside of me that I hadn't set it right. And to go to them in that condition and pretend as if things were different than what they really were would be a lie. You know, what's the point? What's the point of making amends to somebody when you don't actually feel that way? You know, well, there is a point. It's to make yourself feel better until you can get it over with, but it's not very effective. So but I will tell you that I have, I work in the construction industry. We all talk like a bunch of foul sailors, and sorry to the sailors out there. And it's a tough, hard industry, and I am a natural smartass. And I love my industry because it's a great way for me to disguise some of my character defects. And I know it's hard to believe it, but I'm oftentimes wrong. My dad says, if you're going to be cocky, you better be right, you know? So, there's this one, he was a boss, actually, and he was wrong, he was my boss, right? And the truth is that it's not my place to tell my boss that he was wrong and what I think about it. And I did, publicly. And I was completely out of line. And I can remember that the following day, you know, I walked up to him and said, hey, about yesterday, publicly. I was wrong and I was out of line, you know, and I was able to stand up and apologize because I humiliated the guy and I enjoyed it. I will say that. But I knew like deep down inside though, like something had changed inside of me because that's not who I wanted to be anymore. Like, you know, like, is that how I'm of maximum benefit to God? I work in the construction industry. You know how many sober people there are? It's like four of us. You know, it's not very many. And so if the sober person they get to see is the one that, you know, is behaving the way that I just behave, what example am I really setting? Like, it actually matters to me, you know, and not to mention that I took an upper hand because I was wittier than he was. That's all it was. You know, I just happened at that exact moment to be quicker than he was. And I tell you, I never liked that guy. I hated working for him. And I learned more lessons from that relationship in my professional career. Like, I'm so thankful that I had to work with him for a year and a half. And I had the opportunity to work with him again about 2 years later. And he was not happy to see me show up. But he said to me one day, "What happened to you? You just seem nice." So, you know, I'm thinking to myself, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, thank you. So so I want to be of maximum service to God and to other people, and left to my own accord, I don't know how to do that, and I can really recognize when I'm not. So I'm thankful for this program to let me write it out.
Mm-hmm. The next reading is also on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
Okay. Under no condition do we criticize or argue. That means to me I need to be quiet until I figure out what my part in it is, and get them out of it. Again, I didn't have a lot of direct amends except for financial stuff, which we're going to get into. But I had a mother who was still alive when I got sober. My father had passed away, and I was still drinking when he died. And it was ugly. There wasn't enough vodka on the planet for that 2 weeks. And I did it publicly with the family, all trying to, you know, say goodbye to my dad. And so there was a lot of people that I felt like I owed amends to. My sponsor, again, until that was straight on my head, you know, was like, you need to just be quiet. and I remember when there would be, I called them the gatherings, and I'm one of 10 kids. There's a lot of us. They will tell you I'm the only alcoholic in the family. I will tell you that's bullshit. I'm the only one that's sober today. I have a sister who's a veteran of Al-Anon. There's a reason. But there were many gatherings between the time I got sober and my mother's death, that I would have to be in the presence of my siblings, and it was hard to sit there with my mouth shut and not be that old person, and be a different person, and not tell them what I thought. You know, what I thought what they were doing to me. I would call it tunnel vision. My sponsor would say, just leave the room. Just leave the room. If you can't keep your mouth shut, just get out of there. And I thought, I look like a crazy woman. I keep fleeing rooms, you know, in the middle of conversations. This is the best I could do. I don't know what they thought. I think in the beginning, they were pretty sure I was nuts. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was so excited about what I was, you know, had latched onto. I would share it with, like, my poor little sister. She told me later, we were really worried. You know, we knew you weren't drinking, but oh, dear God. Because I just, you know, batshit crazy still. I needed to wait. So I'm going to jump, sort of, because I'll get to talk about it again. I don't want to take away from Casey. I'm loving hearing her. But the money thing, it was a huge thing. Part of what I drank over for the last couple of years was a huge IRS bill. It was an IRS problem I had. And so, you know, I don't know about y'all, but, you know, when I'm drinking, I forget about it. I put stuff away for a while, and then, of course, I come to, and the problem's still there. Well, 10 years of that created a really big problem. And so when I did my first four step and got into steps 8 and 9, by the grace of God, and again, my sponsor did not push that. And she left it alone. And I will tell you, in about a year sober, it's amazing when you start getting letters in the mail from them and you've been sober a little while. I always just threw that sort of mail in a box. You know, went in a box in the closet, and then about every 10 years I'd file bankruptcy and burn it. And the mail started coming, and there were bills from the IRS. And I'm telling you, it was huge. But it was the perfect timing. I was about a year in. I had worked the steps, and that willingness was there. I couldn't wait, and I started to deal with it. And also at that point, you know, I had my feet on the ground a little bit. I wasn't the fear that had crippled me for so long. I was getting coping skills again. I was gaining them. I was ready to start one day at a time, one step by step, asking for help and doing what needed to be done, no matter what the cost, which was really huge. Because I wanted free of that fear and anxiety, because again, I didn't want to drink anymore. And the fear and anxiety had just paralyzed me. And I had found a way out. That's all I got, thanks.
So, Casey, alcoholic addict. So, cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. It was every amends I've ever made has felt unexpected. Like there's no describing the feelings that come along with making amends. Sometimes you know I'm just overcome with love and relief, and other times just a bit of worry and you know, I did have some people that I made amends to say, thanks, we never want to see you again. But you know, when I left there, like I felt really crappy, you know. And actually, that family has been on my amends sheet, has been on my four step, you know, since then. And I think that might be one of the cases where I wish that I had have waited. You know, I wasn't quite ready, and I was young in recovery, and I jumped out and did it without following the directions that had been given to me for making amends. And I really think I did them a disservice with that. You know, and that's the way I feel about it now. The way I felt about it then was that felt really shitty, and it made me cry. I'm really sorry for my mouth. No, I'm going to try to clean that up. But it says here it should not matter. However, if someone throws us out of office, we have made our demonstration and done our part. It is water over the dam. You know, and so it, like, I have, even as a child, I had never been taught such accountability as the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me and continues to teach me, how to suit up and show up and be accountable in all aspects of life. When I'm wrong, when I'm right, you know, when I'm late, you know, when I forget things. And I'm really thankful for the opportunity to learn a way to say I made a mistake, and I think this is how it might have affected you, and I genuinely am sorry that I may have made you feel this way. What can I do to make it better? It's such a great gift to me to be able to say that to other people. Thanks.
The next reading is on page 78. The next reading is on page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
Afraid. Fear. I can't tell you. When caller ID came into existence, no one was happier than me. Dear God. You know, voicemail, delete. I hated it when I had to listen to delete it. That was, I would like put the phone down and walk away. If I didn't hear it, it didn't actually happen. Again, I'm really glad that God's perfect timing, you know. So, yeah, I remember when I got the last letter in the mail from the IRS, and I, it was so bad. When I rolled up in here, I was homeless, unemployable. I'm a single mom. I have four kids, a chihuahua and a cat, and a really big, three-quarter ton white Suburban that some of you guys remember called the Beast. It got 8 miles to the gallon. It would get perfect because there were meetings within 3 miles of me every day. But that's what, we even lived in it for a little while. So then we lived in some hotels, but perfect timing. And meanwhile, I know I owe all this stuff. You're making me conscious of my cussing. And about a year in, I remember my sponsor and I went to a meeting every single day for the first year. She would pick me up and we would go to a meeting every single day. And she picked me up and they'd been coming and I was telling her, but when that last one came, what I know now to be the last one, and I totaled it up. She's like, how was your day? And I go, oh, it's just great. I'm laughing. She goes, what happened? I go, I got another letter from the IRS. She says, oh, that's terrible. I go, $250,000. And I'm just laughing because it was so bad that I didn't even care anymore. It was like, good luck with that. I don't have anything. You got whatever you need, you can come and get. You know, I got a 15-year-old daughter. Hello. I got whatever. You can't have the chihuahua. But still have Bruiser. And so I was willing, though. I was so freaking willing to call them because I wasn't afraid. Isn't that crazy? The fear had been removed. I don't know how else to describe that. The fear had been removed. I had been to enough meetings, done enough of the right things, worked enough steps, prayed enough, talked to enough people, heard enough hope, and I wasn't afraid. And I remember the next day, I couldn't wait till it was 8. I think I was calling at 7:30, calling the IRS. Go figure. And and I, again, did it wrong. If it can be done wrong, I do it wrong. But, you know, God does it. God does what he's going to do, whether I screw it up or not. And I told every single person that answered the phone, no matter how long I had to wait, I'm Grace Shepherd, and I'm an alcoholic in recovery. You know, I led with that chin. And do you know how many people answered the phone and would listen to me and say, you know what, it's going to be okay. My dad died 20 years sober in these rooms. Or my brother is struggling. It was crazy. It was like I was so pumped up because I thought I was helping other people. God gets my ego, whether it's way up here or way down here. You know, it's going to do what it's going to do. It's like, oh, you know. I'm telling them all about it again, like my poor sister thinking, oh, God. And it took 7 years of phone calls. Let me tell you, I was a professional at being on hold. I sat on hold so long that the battery would die twice sometimes, you know. And I did it consistently. It took 7 years. And it didn't, and I didn't care. I didn't care. And the miracle of all of that willingness, and that no matter what the cost, I said, well, can I make payments? And they're like, well, let's see. And they took a little, you know, how much do you make and what do you owe thing. And oh, the other thing I learned here was honesty, because I was a natural born liar too. Whether I thought I had too much or too little, the truth just has not come out of my mouth. But I told the truth, and the woman, she goes, oh, darling, I'm so sorry. You just don't make enough to make payments. I'm like, shit. Well, God's will again. So, you know, they slapped a big lien on me. I didn't care. I didn't have anything to lean. Maybe I might win the lottery. Maybe I might, you know, whatever. 7 years. And one day in the mail, I got a letter, unbeknownst to me, that said, all debts are free and clear, paid in full. I'd never paid a dime. How does that happen? How does that even happen? I believe it was just one more instance, and it's not that I won the lottery or any of that, but I was freed up, and I'm gonna go back to what we read over here, so that I could be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I needed to be free of that. In God's time, I was. And so I share that because it always astounds me when I talk about that with people. Hell, my sponsor, when I shared it one time, I have a new sponsor. She's like, oh, I wish you'd talk to my boyfriend. I'm like, I'd be glad to, you know. Because we're that fear, I don't care what it is, until I'm ready to be done with it when it's just too much. I'm not willing to walk through it. No one could make me either. No one could make me. If I had a sponsor that says, you will call the IRS, you will make a payment arrangement, I can tell you every character, you might as well pour Miracle-Gro on my character defects. I'd be lying. I'd be not telling her things, which I found out is a lie by omission. but when I just suit up and show up and do the next right thing, it's amazing. That fear, I think, to be free of that is the ninth step, and when we're not there yet, they get to do that next week. The ninth step promises, it's not that where it says fear of economic insecurity will leave us. At first I thought, oh, I'm gonna get rich. No, I don't worry about money. I don't worry about the lack of it. Or if I do, and I will tell you I'm not perfect, because that's a hot spot for me still to this day. money and my kids. I have to remember, though. I mean, that to me, I didn't think that was fixable or survivable. I thought it was something that was going to affect me negatively for the rest of my life. And if anything, it's become an asset. So anyway, that's all I got there. Thanks.
So I like this part where it says, nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Right? So it says we don't get to go in and say, you know, I owe you money, how can I fix it? We have to actually say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I didn't pay you. I really liked this part because I was a thief. I stole everything all the time. I got caught for some of it, but I knew what I really stole. And I, through the grace of God, one day let my sponsor know. So she came up with various ways in which I could make financial amends to people that I had harmed that didn't know I had harmed them. You know, and some of it meant that I went to restaurants and say, hey, I walked out on you one night. And the funniest part is like, yeah, we remember. It was like 5 years ago.
Oh, my God.
It's like, well, I'm here to pay my tab. And you know, but I also, or wait for the police if that's what you choose to do. You know, and it was scary. It was very scary because I could go to jail, you know, and but I so desperately wanted to stay sober. I really did, and I genuinely believe that if I do not do these things, I will not stay sober. And I also am genuinely sorry that I was such a thief. Like, it's crazy. It still baffles me how disconnected I can get from what I really believe when you put drugs and alcohol into my system. I'm a complete Jekyll and Hyde. And so it took me a long time to clear out the wreckage of my past financially. Because, you know, I was unemployable as well and also homeless when I came here. And it also took me a long time to remember all the people that I had really ripped off, if I'm going to be honest about it. You know, I think the remembering is finally done. Thank goodness. I love where it says we must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we may have to go. And one thing that I can absolutely say during this time of being truthful with my creditors is I watched somebody in this program that I really respect go through something where he found something from a really long time ago and faced going to jail over it and stood up and did the next right thing and did go to jail for a while and did it with years and years and years sober. Mm-hmm. You know, and in the meantime, I'm worried about, you know, a petty larceny charge from walking out in a restaurant that I, you know, that I stiffed. And I did leave a tip because that was important to me, too. Important to me, too. You know, and then when I became a waitress, it was really annoying in early sobriety when people would walk out of my tables. I'm like, oh, my God, how many times am I going to have to pay for this?
Karma.
Karma's terrible. So I'm super thankful for my sponsor for helping me arrange my financial thoughts. Because I remember she sat down for me one time because, again, I was very eager. I was eager because I was very, very uncomfortable. I wanted to fix everything immediately, and you cannot do that. And, you know, and honestly, I didn't know it, but I had ulterior motives, and they were to feel better. You know, and so I had to sit in it for a while until my motives could be because I was genuinely apologetic for what I had done to society and other people. And I was, my sponsor set out a payment plan for me, and it was food, clothing, shelter, and bus tickets. You know, and I was like, what is this? You know, and she's like, these are the things that you need to pay right now. Right. And I had a really hard time with it because I felt like I was wasting time and it was going to be selfish of me to do these things when I should be taking care of the wreckage of my past. You know, and but she was exactly right, because I cannot be could not be of maximum service to anyone else if I was skating on taking care of my responsibilities that were present at the time, because it would be just like an alcoholic to like pay rent late so I could pay back this restaurant that I ripped off. That doesn't make any sense. But that's the best kind of plan that I could come up with for myself. So I was really thankful that she was there to help organize that for me, and that I had enough willingness in me to follow her instructions, even though I felt like she was leading me down a very slow, wrong path.
It was wrong.
It's totally wrong.
Good?
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Sorry.
All right, so I'm going to read this last one, and then if you guys just want to like wrap it up a minute each real quick, and then we'll close it. Last one on page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
I wrote down here too, you know, it talked about originally had the, we were willing to go to any lengths to conquer alcohol. And then it says, the second one, that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. Now I've jumped over into the spiritual world. Thank God. Real quick, I want to say my father of my children committed suicide in 2010. And, you know, it was, I carried a lot of stuff around about that. Makes no here nor there. And then my mother got to see me get sober, and she died 2 years ago. I will tell you that my amends to my mother was, she was the most difficult relationship I ever had and the best teacher. And I would never have been able to say that had I not gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to, begrudgingly, I called that woman every single night after every single meeting for 7 years. After every meeting I left, I would call her on the phone. And there were, in the beginning, it was great because I got to tell her all the cray-cray in my head, and she just was my best advocate. And then after a while, I would think, oh, my God, I got to call my mother again, you know. And we trekked through the amends I made with that woman. There were no words that I could ever have said that would have done what the time did. Time was what I had to do. And I got to be present, not only to call her every night, but to be with her when she took her last breath, when my other siblings couldn't sit and watch anymore, and I sat there and watched her die. And I don't have one single regret. And I can tell you, the relationship I had with that woman, I should. So thank you for the ninth step. My father, who I was not sober for, and it took me a while to see this, and with the help of a sponsor, the amends I made to my dad was to be present for my mother. That's how there's no going to graves, writing letters, not for me anyway. I had to do the action. I had to take the action. Told me that. This is action. I have to do something. And my father, because I believe in a life after this one, was saying, go, go, sis, go. The amends I made to my father and my kids is to be a sober mother to his children, and to I get welled up on this one because I was so pissed off at that man for so long, justifiably rationalized to not badmouth him and to have his memory be a positive one to his children, to not let that push on into them. Because I'm saving seats for a couple of them. And so those are the amends. Like I said early on, I don't care. I wish I could go and sit down and talk to somebody. It didn't work out that way for me. But the ninth step, I'm so glad I have this as a coping skill today. You know, I don't have to carry shit around. I get two choices. I'm either going to tell you what I did or I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to let you off the hook. Thanks. That's all I got.
So, you know, every spiritual experience I've ever had, I was never in the middle of it and was like, this is a spiritual experience. It was always after the fact that I realized that that is what was happening to me, and I had a lot of spiritual experiences through my amends. So I had... I had about 5 months sober, and I had I left my homestead that I had turned into a flop house. I completely surrendered to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was willing to do anything anyone told me to do, and miracles were happening in my life. I didn't end up homeless. I ended up with no money in an Oxford house that was full of 2 days before and didn't have a bed. And there are people in this room that used to go there and give me rides from there to meetings. All I had to do was have the willingness, and the path that just opened up for me. And I had one more court date coming up. I had gone through several during that 5 month period. I had one more court date coming up, and I you know, if you're in an Oxford house, you have to pay your rent weekly, period. You know, or you have to have X amount of money to save your bed. You know, it's self-supporting. So if you're not there to support it, it's going to drown. So I had to go to court for this petty larceny charge. You know, I'm like, God, whatever your will is, God, whatever your will is. And I had people from AA show up with me, and I'm so thankful for them. Some of them are in this room tonight, and it was a wonderful experience. And the judge gave me 4 months. And I got in that holding cell and was like, you motherfucker, that is not what I meant, right? Oh, I was so angry, and I was fear-stricken, right? It was all God's will right up until I got time. And then I was like, what are you doing? You know? So It was really hard, and I was in control of everything out here, and I had a whole lot of stuff that I needed to manage and take care of, and my sponsor told me some simple instructions, figure out how to be useful in jail, and I was no longer allowed to play spades after a couple of days of being there. So, but I did do my anger inventory while I was in there, and I found this lady that didn't know how to speak English, and we started working with each other in the morning time, and when I left, she knew a lot of words, and actually, after I left, the ladies in that cell block continued to work with her, and she wrote me a letter in English, and I was of maximum service to people in that place, and I did not lose my bed at the Oxford House, and literally, from that time frame to where I am sitting today, it was exactly on God's time. He did not mess up. He did not make a mistake, and it really is His will whether I want it to be or not. And so I'm super thankful that I showed up and that I didn't run, you know, and I didn't know how to show up when that much was at stake. I didn't know how to do that or how to do it gracefully without throwing a tantrum, except for that 20-minute tantrum I threw in the holding cell. I wasn't very spiritual at that moment. Thank you for letting me be here.
All right. The seventh tradition basket is being passed. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also, their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholics who still suffer. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites us with all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Thank you.
Yeah. My name is Amy. I'm an alcoholic.
Amy.
Tomorrow night, Westside Young and Sober and District 14 are sponsoring a service workshop. It's right up the street at Trinity Presbyterian. It's a potluck. The eating starts at 6:30 and the meeting starts at 7:30. There'll be three speakers, one talking about district work, one talking about intergroup work, and one talking about area work. Everybody come.
Thank you, Amy.
Hi, my name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
The 44th Annual Coaching Fund Conference is coming up. A little ways out there. It's in February. February 14th, 15th, 16th, down at the Windsor Hotel at the Coaching Fund. Friday night, there's speakers. Saturday night, speakers. The dance Friday night. Saturday night, Sunday morning, speakers. The Great Share, if you have never been.
Thanks. Any other announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hands? Awesome. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety we would like to welcome you?
Hey, Berkeley.
Welcome.
Glad you're here.
Hi, Maddie.
Hi, Maddie.
Welcome.
Literature is available to my left, your right. Please see a home group member after the meeting if you are interested in buying a book. Pamphlets are free. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here at this table after the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recording and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank the panel again. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. You hit the train tracks, you've gone too far. It's on your right-hand side. Do I volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Ralph.
My name is Ralph. I'm an alcoholic.
Ralph.
I will go with my producer, Jessica Bowling. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do these days for the man who is so sick. The answers will come if your own house is annoying. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See through that your relationship with them is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your partners. Clear away the records of your past. Get free of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
A nice way of closing.
Forgive those who trespass against us.